Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey, and I'm delighted to be back on the program today for an important conversation, one on Christian education. And to speak about that topic, I have with me Erica Busey, Director of Development at Westlake Christian Academy in Grays Lake, Illinois. She's also my wife. Welcome back to the program, Erica. It's good
Thanks.
To have you.
It's great to be here, Camden.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. And we're on the road, so it's spring break for our family. Our kids are on spring break. And I thought it'd be a wonderful opportunity to kind of take a moment and pause and think about some important things regarding Christian education. And seeing that we are on the road, and I'm looking at trying to find a way to record an episode, this is a great time to fit that in. So if you're watching video, if you're watching this episode on video, you'll see we're in a bit of a different locale. The location will remain private, I suppose, but we're visiting family, so we're happy to be here and to be talking about some important things. If you haven't been following along, we have a lot going on the website. You can head on over to reformedforum.org, and we have a new course on Van Til's Trinitarian Theology available through Reformed Academy. So that's a way to keep up with your Christian education as an adult or as a perhaps a college student or a seminary student. And there's a whole host of other resources available there for self-directed and guided learning. And we're looking forward to expanding some of those offerings over the next year or two to provide more and more resources for churches and for covenant families to help and instruct and raise up people in their understanding and their knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Our mission here is to present every person mature in Christ, to support the church in her charge of doing that, as is described and warranted in Colossians 1:28. And along those lines, you know, raising up and presenting every person mature in Christ, we're speaking today about Christian education. Now, of course, this is a really important subject and something that touches on every single person, but particularly and uniquely upon parents who have children of, school age. But Erica, as we begin this, I'm wondering, first off, if you might speak a little bit about, we'll get into more of the specifics later, but just describe very briefly as we introduce the subject, your position at Westlake Christian Academy, and then really answer the question perhaps of why is this a particularly timely subject at this moment in history in our country?
Sure. So Westlake Christian Academy is the school where our children attend. We have some elementary kids and one in preschool. And my job as the director of development is to make sure that the school has the resources needed to carry out its mission. And I like to think of three different ways that I accomplish this job. First, I do traditional fundraising and find people who want to partner financially with the school. I also help find new students who would want to come to the school. And then the third thing I do is help to retain the current families that we have by reminding them and encouraging them of the importance of Christian education.
Wonderful. Yeah. And we're very thankful to have a Christian school nearby. We'll get into the different modes of Christian schooling a little bit later in our conversation, but this has been a really wonderful option for us. Yeah. It's not distinctly a Reformed school, but mm-hmm. one that is evangelical, that has a firm commitment to biblical inerrancy and interpreting the Bible along those lines that we find most appropriate, and a school that is indeed supportive of many Reformed principles. So we're very mm-hmm. thankful to be part of the broader Christian community in the area. And it's been very good for me and for you. And I've been involved even as a local minister to mm-hmm. be able to teach occasional sessions in the high school. They invite me as a Calvinist to defend Calvinism to a bunch of high school students. I've done that a few times, as well as to speak at a chapel of all ages. So it's been excellent. One thing that's been particularly on our minds, and no doubt for many of our listeners, for you as well, is the effects that this recent COVID pandemic have had on education. And it truly has uprooted education, particularly in the United States, but no doubt around the world. And families now have been influenced to think about education in ways that they have not considered before. It's not as if those issues didn't exist, But now, given the impacts and the fact that people are not able to go out and to congregate into groups, so much education, public education is just turned remote, and mm-hmm. people have to stay at home and maybe get on a computer, and if they have the means to do that, it has caused people to rethink really some just basic decisions that perhaps were never considered. They were just made for people because that's what people typically do. And so we're finding in our community that many Christian families now who had not previously engaged in explicitly Christian education in schooling, for example, are now starting to rethink some of these factors. Have you noticed that?
I think you're right about that. I've noticed starting last summer that the pandemic is causing families to pause and consider their education choices. And a lot of these families, maybe they'd been thinking about it. I got a lot of phone calls in the admissions office that would start with, well, we've thought about Christian education, but we were busy and public schools across the street or, you know, whatever reason. But now they're taking the time to pause and maybe make a different choice for their family. So we've seen a lot of elementary kids and junior high kids coming to our school, which normally parents are making these choices like preschool and kindergarten, and that is going to be their path usually for the rest of their education. But this has given families who had already chosen public education the chance to pause and think about what direction they want to go. And so it's been an opportunity for families to choose Christian education, either by homeschooling or by sending their kids to a private school.
Mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to take stock of and the lay of the land, we should say, to get survey the lay of the land, to use the appropriate metaphor, not to mix my metaphors, and speak about the general call or duty that parents have, Christian parents have within the covenant, to raise up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So one of the most basic texts, the places you're going to see listed most whenever you open up and read a book about Christian education or a book on education from a Christian perspective, the passage you're going to see perhaps quoted most is Deuteronomy chapter 6, specifically verses 4 through 9, which I'll read. Of course, it starts the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So there's a lot to unpack there, which we will not be exegeting that passage today. And you've never preached on this before, have you, Erica? I haven't preached on this passage before. I have done exegesis on the Shema for some research, but I think it's important to note that Christian education, understood correctly, is non-negotiable for Christian families. It is not an option. Christian families are required, charged, commanded by the Lord to raise up their children in the knowledge of the Lord. That's not an option. However, before you turn off the program because you don't send your children to an explicitly Christian school, I do make a bit of a distinction, and this was made to me by a previous headmaster at Westlake Christian Academy, which I thought this was a helpful distinction, that Christian education and Christian schooling are not coterminous. While Christian education is non-negotiable for Christian families, the way in which you school a child is certainly a matter that each family should determine given their own particular situation and the abilities of the children, the giftedness or abilities of the family, financial considerations. There's a whole host of things to consider regarding the mode of schooling. But and there are a whole host of factors to take into account in terms of which type of schooling may be most appropriate in order to satisfy and to glorify the Lord in the raising up of your children. So, Erica, would you maybe give us a bit of a survey of the different schooling options, we might say? I imagine at times we might slip into speaking of Christian education and Christian schooling, but we'll try to keep those neat and tidy if we can, but what are the different approaches to schooling that are available to Christian families?
Sure. And I just want to start by saying there's no one right way to do this. You're going to encounter people who are really strong advocates for one way or another. And they might have good reasons for thinking that. But there are options available to parents in terms of providing a Christian education.
And at this point, we're not even speaking about pedagogy.
No.
Because when we start to introduce, you know, classical education,
right,
for example, that's a different discussion we're not going to address today. But
right,
we're just speaking about modes, types of schooling.
Where, yeah, and how.
And who does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you pay?
Yeah.
So in public school, you pay your taxes, and that gives you the privilege of sending your child to the school that is in your district. Maybe you have a couple charter school choices, but all of those have a curriculum that is mandated by your state government and then implemented by a local school board. So it's possible that like you can live in the state of Illinois, and perhaps you live in a certain county where you might have a more conservative or a more liberal school board who would implement your state guidelines in a different way. But it is a government public education. Along with that comes a lot of extra resources, lots of choice in terms of classes, lots of extracurricular programs, and lots of special services for kids who might have special needs. It doesn't have a price tag other than your tax bill, and transportation is provided. So this is the default option for a lot of families in America.
And it's not because, you know, overall, we're glad that that society is educated.
Oh, yeah. It is important for democracy to have an educated society.
Correct. Now, how that education happens and what people are learning is something maybe we'll revisit, especially in Illinois, is something we'll revisit maybe toward the end of this program. For many families, this is just what is done. It's the default mode because it's what society does, and we're already paying our taxes, and there are not adequate voucher systems, or we don't receive or pay our taxes, and then that goes into an account that wherein we can direct the funds. They go to the public school.
Right.
And then, you know, if we send our children to another school, that money's gone. So this ends up being, for many families, just the default choice. It's the easiest, so to speak, because it doesn't require as much thought, some cognitive effort, and is certainly societally easy. Bus comes and picks up my kid, takes him there, and drives him home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they could play all the sports that they want and have the science labs and all sorts of stuff. So. Mm-hmm. That's a very common mode. I don't think we need to necessarily explain that. But what are some other options that families have taken?
So some other options would be homeschooling, where in the home, one parent, I think primarily it would be the mother who is the homeschooling parent. But in some cases, it is the dad. And sometimes there might be a retired grandparent or somebody like that who's helping. But it happens within the home. You can either put together your own curriculum, or there are lots of companies who can provide that for you. Some do online courses. There's a lot of different ways that you can homeschool. But then along with that, there are hybrid co-ops for homeschool families where they might go one or two days a week, usually to a local church, and there's a program where other people are teaching your children. Usually it's other parents, and the parent would be teaching your child certain subjects, and then the rest of the days of the week, you're at home completing your coursework and working on your stuff that way. And then the last method would be a private school. You might call this a day school. It's a traditional school setting where you're there, you know, like 8 to 3 or something like that. You have classrooms, you have specials, which would be art and music and PE. Your junior high and high school kids are having different teachers for different subjects. And so that would be a private school. Usually, These could be either affiliated with a denomination or a particular church, or like Westlake, where our kids attend, it could be more of just a broadly evangelical school. And then there's also with private schools, open versus closed enrollment. And so an open enrollment school is basically going to take anyone who applies and can pay tuition and meet their requirements. And then more of a closed enrollment school is one that is only going to take mission appropriate families.
Certainly we see, you know, people may have a Catholic or a Lutheran parish school in their mm-hmm. area. Those are divided up regionally right. under the oversight of the diocese and the Catholic Church, version. But yet those schools are typically open to anyone that wants to come as long mm-hmm. as you meet some basic requirements, you know, you don't have major disciplinary issues or whatnot, or even if you do, but they're not mission focused schools. They are Christian schools that are committed to a certain measure of Christian principles, but they're not requiring the students or parents necessarily to subscribe to a confession of faith.
Right.
Whereas a mission-focused school or one with closed enrollment, we might say, they all have a mission. They should be focused on their mission. But
right.
Closed enrollment schools will require the students, or if the students maybe are not old enough, require at least one of the parents to subscribe to a statement of faith in order to have their children matriculate there.
Right, absolutely. And so some people, you know, might say that they went to Christian school as a kid and maybe they didn't have a great experience and it wasn't a particularly Christian environment. That could have been more of an open enrollment type situation where kids who were kicked out of the public school came there mm-hmm. and you didn't have family support at home. Whereas the school where our kids go is a mission focused school and it is a Christian school for Christian families. Mm-hmm. And we look at ourselves as a school, as a partner with families and their churches. And so that makes a huge difference in the culture of the school and just what they're teaching and everything.
Well, and also whether you're closed or open enrollment, often some Christian schools might have an entirely different culture. Mm-hmm. Some people might be sending their children there for religious purposes to find like-minded students. For others, they might have an excellent athletics program. Like, you know, we right. see a lot of the top, recruits in college basketball and football will often come from private mm-hmm. religious schools, often sure. Catholic schools, but not only. And yet others will send their children to private school merely because they have excellent academics. And they might right. be kind of a prep school that prepares children to qualify for enrollment in, you know, the top universities in the world. And they don't necessarily care whether or not their kids are getting a Christian education. They just want to go there because it's better at test prep than the public school may be. So yeah. there's all sorts of dynamics involved and not necessarily all based on, not everyone involved is thinking about Deuteronomy 6, for example.
Well, yes. And, you know, our school has a rather humble facility, which helps us to keep mission appropriate families because the other ones aren't interested. Yeah.
It's the public school from the turn of the century. And by turn of the century, I mean the 1900s. Probably not that old, but, no. you know, it's certainly, it's more than adequate.
It is a well-loved facility that serves us well.
It is, but it's not going to knock anyone's socks off when they walk in and think, well, I'm going to get out of the, you know, our public schools are the ones that have the brand new football field and all that sort of thing. So you got to make your choices, right? And now, speaking of that, you know, there are trade-offs to each of these. Mm-hmm. Again, I at least want to make a distinction between Christian education, which is non-negotiable for all Christians, and Christian schooling. In Christian schooling, there are ways for Christian families to be faithful, you know, engaging in all these different forms. Some may have more advantages than others, but at least one thing we want to mention is there are trade-offs of all yeah. kinds, whether you are sending your kids to public school, doing homeschool, doing some sort of hybrid, like a co-op model, or sending them to a private school, whatever the type may be. What are some of those things to consider as we're engaging in these types of education? What are the trade-offs?
Well, sure. So this is something that I talk to families about a lot. I'm often the first point of contact for families who are thinking about Christian education. And I like to start off by talking with them about their long-term goals for their family in terms of Christian education. And so I would say that for a Christian family, especially a Reformed family, you should have the long-term goal that you are going to educate your children in a Christian way. And as a family, you're going to do everything that you can to give your kids a biblical worldview and to provide them with teachers who are going to encourage a biblical worldview in them and teachers who are going to set a godly example of faith and life for them. We want our children to respect their teachers and to listen to them and to obey them. We teach our children to obey those who are in authority over them. Mm-hmm. And so as a Christian family, you're going to want to figure out what do we want long-term for our kids. And hopefully it's to provide your kids with an education that is as Christian as it can be and gives them that biblical worldview. When you approach that, I think it's good to approach it on a year-by-year basis with that long-term goal in mind, but looking at your family situation. Are there two parents who are working? Who's working? How much income is there? Are there younger siblings? Are there older siblings? What's going on in the dynamics of your family? Are there kids who have special needs? What are the circumstances in our family this year? And we're going to look at what we can do. How can we implement our long-term goal of Christian education for our family this year? And there are going to be families where public school might be the only or the best option, especially if you have a kid with special needs. Mm-hmm. That could really be a good choice for you. If you can't afford to pay for private therapy and assistance, then you might really need to use the public school for your kid with special needs. And maybe that's something that you look at every year. Has my kid made enough progress? There may be kids who are always in the public school mm-hmm. because of that. There may be situations where there's only one parent. And even with one parent working, that means you can't homeschool right. because you're working. And you may not be able to have enough income to pay for private schooling. And so public school may be your only choice. And you shouldn't feel bad.
Yeah. Unless you had extended family or church family right. who was willing to take on a heavy burden.
Right. Yeah. But you shouldn't feel bad if, you know, if those are your circumstances and right. maybe there's no Christian school anywhere nearby, then you're going to need to rely on your church to support you a lot in providing that Christian education outside of, you know, the school day. So it's available, it's free. Other than tax paying, and sometimes it might be the only way to meet your needs. So there's public school. Mm-hmm. Homeschooling, you have to have a parent who is entirely available. I don't know that hardly any homeschooling parents think that it's particularly easy.
write in if you do. You can send us an email. Homeschooling is so simple.
No, I don't think it is at all. But some parents might be more skilled in that than others. Some might have an extra measure of patience than others. Yeah. And then for some families, there's private Christian schooling, which is also going to have the trade-off. There's no bus that comes and picks up your kid. You have to get your kids there.
Now, there are always exceptions.
Right.
Because in Pennsylvania, there are public True. School buses that
yes.
are required to take kids to private schools.
That'd be awesome.
Most states don't have that requirement.
Right.
And there are other ways to mix and match, and there are some ways to make things work. For example, if your child needs speech therapy, for example, in Illinois, and if you're sending your kid to a Christian school that's accredited, mm-hmm. there are often ways for the private school kids to still take advantage of public school
Yes.
services.
Yes, but not at the same level. Like you can get speech therapy, but you're not going to get a one-on-one aid.
No, but my point is sometimes it's not a hard and fast
yes.
one-on-one. Or in some districts, in some areas, you might be at a private school, private Christian school, but your kid can take advantage of athletics at the public school.
Right.
Or if you're a homeschooler, you might be able to go to the local Christian school and be involved in the band or something like that. It's not always one mm-hmm. or the other.
Right.
It can sometimes be a blend of them.
Absolutely. And that really does depend on where you live. Like in Illinois, where we are, homeschool students can play on their local sports team, but private school students cannot.
Yeah.
And then, so for example, like at Westlake, then we have athletics teams and we allow homeschool students to play on our sports teams. So yeah. If you're a homeschool student, you can go play wherever you want. But one of the things with private Christian schooling is that you have to pay tuition. And so oftentimes that's going to involve a second parent at least working maybe mm-hmm. part-time, which is what our family does. We have chosen for me to work part-time at our kids' school, which I think is great.
It's I
get to do something that I love with my kids. I frequently get to even go in and videotape my kids doing their programs and take pictures and promote it. That's just the nature of what I do. But I think the point is that it's hard and it's a sacrifice. No matter which choice you make, there are trade-offs for all of them. And it just is a huge investment of time and can be an investment of money. Because even if you're homeschooling, then you're not having a second income. Which if you sent your kids to public school, you could. So it's just hard no matter what. But it's worth it. Like mm-hmm. as parents, what else should you be doing?
Yeah. And it might not be as hard as you might imagine mm-hmm. in the sense that initially there might be an enormous sticker shock, but in various situations there are financial aid packages. Mm-hmm. In our case, you apply and it gets sent to a third party. And so often the cost, the financial cost of education might not be as much as you think it will be. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it does involve a choice. Most families are not going to be driving two late model cars and sending their kids to private Christian school. But at the end of the day, you have to make difficult decisions and decide, what is most important? Do I want to raise what's going to be best for my children? How can I best follow the Lord's commands and glorify him in how I raise my kids? Those are the kinds of decisions that can't be made for you. You have to make them, but you need to make them, thoughtfully, prayerfully, and in consultation, Lord willing, with your church and with, people in your community and extended family.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more. We've already alluded to many of these things, but those are some general principles and general guidelines for kind of navigating this terrain of Christian schooling, Christian education, but sometimes it's helpful to have more concrete examples. So let's dive into our own family situation a little bit more and talk about your work and our family, but then get into some of the details and some things that are going on in Illinois, because in many ways, I think it's a bellwether for what is probably going to be happening in many more states throughout our country.
Yeah, so before we had kids and when Camden was in seminary, I worked in development, which I think stewardship is also a good term for what I do. I worked at a gospel rescue mission in Philadelphia and one in Peoria and gained a lot of development experience in terms of fundraising, communication, marketing, whatnot. And then I stayed home when our oldest son was born. And stayed home for 7 years. In that period of time, our oldest started preschool. Then another one started preschool. And we were committed to keeping them at Christian school. But when you start adding more and more children to your tuition plan, it becomes apparent that something needs to change. I had already helped at the school on their development committee, and a position became available part-time. And so we decided that as a family, for us, it would be better for me to work part-time at our kids' school and continue to send our kids to a private Christian school. My talents are more in line with working at the school than teaching our kids at home.
And I can't do it.
They love going to school. I love going to school. We all love going to school. And the pandemic has only made it more apparent that we all love going to school. And so for our family, that's just what has worked best. And I'm so thankful that we live in a place where we have a Christian school. And I'm thankful that we have a church that supports us in our choice to educate our kids at a Christian school.
Yeah, we've had a great, our church is phenomenal for that. We'll talk more about how churches can support Christian families, providing Christian education for them a little bit later. You know, Westlake Christian Academy is in the Grays Lake, Illinois. So is Hope OPC, where I serve as a minister, and Reform Forum is located there as well. So we kind of, all different aspects of our life revolve around this little community. And also I spend an enormous amount of time at Fred's Diner. And that's also in Grays Lake, in between my office and the school, conveniently. So shout out to my friends at Fred's Diner, where I'm known as Preacher Man. So, you know, this little community is part of Chicagoland. We're not in Cook County, which is where Chicago is. So we're not always, you know, taken by the whims of the, you know, we'll just say the administration there. Nevertheless, we're nearby and we're in the orbit largely of this machine that is Illinois politics, which does not have a, from our perspective, you know, the greatest track record in the world.
No, Illinois is progressive in a lot of stuff and they pride themselves on that. And along with that comes some issues in education. Yeah. And so if you look at private Christian schools in Illinois, they can be recognized by the State Board of Education, which holds them to a different set of standards. Like the State Board of Education has standards for public schools, and then they have standards for private schools. And there are certain things that public schools are required to do that private schools don't have to do. Oftentimes they will test them in the public sphere, and then maybe however many years later, they kind of trickle down to the private schools, depending on what it is. But right now, especially in my admissions work, I'm seeing a lot of parents who are starting to pay more attention to what Illinois is doing in terms of education. And there's a couple things that if you live in Illinois, you need to be paying attention to. And if you don't live in Illinois, it's probably coming for you.
Yeah, it might be in Massachusetts, but it's certainly coming. One thing I want to draw the attention to, everyone's attention to, are the government, the governmental challenges that are coming to Christian education, but also really a large measure of just flat out indoctrination in the public schools. And that's intentional. It's not accidental. It's intentional by the people that are making the legislation and bringing these things to be. I would like to point out an episode of the First Things podcast where Stanley Kurtz joined Mark Bauerlein to talk about a phenomenon known as action civics. And I have a link to this in the episode notes, which I'll include in the description to this post and hopefully in the tag on the episode as well. Action civics is a way in which they are teaching and instructing and then requiring teachers to teach this. It's not an option. It's not just a curriculum, but it's really in many ways a mandate that teachers would teach a certain type of civic engagement. And we're not speaking here about civics as in these are the three branches of government. Right. This is how they work. It goes much further than that to require that students be taught how to engage in activism. That is how they would protest or how they are supposed to be involved in local nonprofit organizations or NGOs. But the, those that are in view tend to be, you know, much more progressive causes. You know, we're not talking about being involved in the Reform Forum and try to develop, governmental policy in our think tank or something like that, which we're not interested in doing ourselves. We have a different task. But those that would be engaged in more progressive tasks, you can use your imagination to figure those out. There also was an important op-ed that was published back in February by a man named George F. Will. It was published in the Washington Post, titled, "The Worst Governed State Now Turns to Indoctrination." Illinois is that worst governed state. Here, let me read a paragraph from that op-ed. Again, I'll have a link to this in the episode description as well. Imposing uniformity of thought is the Board of Education's agenda for, quote, culturally responsive teaching and leading, end quote, CRTL. This builds upon Illinois' 2015 law requiring teachers to implement action civics, which means leading their pupils in activism on behalf of various causes. CRTL would make explicit that only woke causes are worthy causes. So this goes more than just saying you must teach a certain form of activism, action civics, but now there are explicit progressive causes that are part of this indoctrination. There has since been one perfection to the language where they changed the word progressive to inclusive.
But just words.
Up until then, it literally and specifically said progressive causes, progressive understandings of things. And that now with inclusive includes all measure of LGBTQ issues, sexual identity, sexual ethics, an unraveling of the nuclear family, you name it. Like, it's all baked into what the Illinois State Board of Education is not just promoting, but actively promoting and actively requiring of public school teachers, no matter what their own thoughts and beliefs on the matter are.
Right. And so that particular article is about teaching standards. And so that means that programs in Illinois who train educators are going to be incorporating these particular things into their programs for training educators. And when you get licensed and certified as a teacher, you're going to have to agree to some things that I don't know that Christians could agree to in good conscience. Right. I really don't know. And then, so those are the teaching standards, but then there's a couple other things, if you're in Illinois, you need to be paying attention to.
And again, this is starting to come around in Massachusetts too, and there are some other states that are kind of on the watch list. So listen to that First Things podcast, but Illinois, we're seeing it and experiencing it in spades.
Oh yeah. So there's a law that just passed, I think it was in 2019, but for this school year, they have implemented it already in Illinois that LGBTQ history is required to be taught in public schools and it needs to be part of the curriculum. And then there's another one that is currently, like right now, they're debating it in Illinois and they want to make sex ed mandatory in Illinois, which might not sound that bad, but think about this. This law would require, starting in third grade, that the curriculum in the public school for sex ed include sexual orientation and gender identity. That is not something that I want my children learning about in a public school classroom. It's just not appropriate for them to be learning about that. And so these are explicit things that are being done, but you also have to consider, if this is the climate in your public school, what kind of picture books do you think your kindergartners and preschoolers are going to be reading? They're going to be reading books where the other preschooler has two mommies. The kindergartner has two daddies. They are going to be incorporating things into just their daily curriculum where they're trying to normalize these types of things that we don't want our children to be taught.
Yeah, these are things that are just explicitly contrary to the law of God, to his revealed will. And the works of the law are written on our heart. These are things that we know, yet suppress the truth and unrighteousness. And the very basic teachings just about reality are under attack. And now teachers in the public school are starting to be required to instruct the children in these things.
Yeah, I have had multiple public school teachers come to open houses at our Christian school saying, we cannot in good conscience send our children to public school in Illinois. And one of them said, I will teach at this school until they fire me. I will not teach the things that they're requiring, but I'm going to be a light in the school. But my children, they can't be a light. Yeah. It's like you say, you don't send untrained missionaries to the field, and children are not trained. You can't send them to school to be a light and to be missionaries. You send them to school to be taught, and they're going to learn the things that are taught them right at their school.
Yeah, I think the notion of us being salt and light in the world is, and the application of kid missionaries in the public school has been sorely misunderstood. And what a burden to put on a child, too. You're sending that child, an impressionable child, to go be educated in large measure by the state. And then you're saying not only that, you know, ward off, you know, the unbelieving thoughts that are hoisted upon you, but more than that, you need to be a herald and a proclaimer of the gospel in the midst of it. I mean, okay.
Well,
a third grader is supposed to be doing this.
Right. And as a family, I think it's good to have that mindset, but you can do that by joining a community baseball team if you can find one that doesn't play on Sunday.
Well, it's also,
and as a family, reach out to
precisely, but being salt and light also is us in being a testimony just by who we are and our identity as being united to Christ by faith, and the fact that our existence has an effect upon the world.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean everyone has to be a missionary in the way that we might think of that. But our existence certainly has this effect. And there are a lot of ways to engage in our society. But we're getting down on public education and you know, in our area, there's good reason to do that. But I'm interested, Erica, to hear more about what other families are thinking about as a result of some of these governmental policies. They're now starting to realize that some of these things are real concerns, because maybe 5 years ago it was only the nutcases, you know, the Christian radicals who are claiming that the state is going to turn their kids into Nazis or something like that. You know, one thing that Adolf Hitler was very interested in doing is educating the youth.
Yeah,
there's a reason for that. It's very effective, but. As of 5 years ago, it was always thought, well, okay, you're just hyper-concerned, you're alarmist, you know, things aren't really that bad. But you're finding, you know, at least in our conversations, what I'm hearing from you is that more families are starting to realize that this isn't just somebody crying wolf or somebody, you know, Chicken Little.
Yeah, I think because of the pandemic, parents are paying more attention to education in general. So that means even in the news that you consume, maybe you're reading the news about what's going to happen with the schools. Are they going back in person or not? Well, if you read a news feed on your smartphone, that's also going to start to throw in other education news about your state. And all of a sudden, you're going to start to see all the stuff about the bills that are trying to get passed in your local legislature. And so you're going to start to pay more attention to that. Maybe you're listening to your kid's Zoom class and you're starting to see and hear things that's going on.
You have a lot more hands-on experience with what
classroom.
Is actually being taught.
Yeah, mm-hmm. those things are happening. I think it's just giving families the chance to pause and pay more attention and see what's going on with their kids, and to realize public school is not the only choice. And right now it's not a great one for multiple reasons. Like where we live, they're not in person full time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not teaching your kids the things that you want them to learn as a Christian parent.
So if people are interested in looking into a different form of Christian schooling other than public schooling, but yet they either aren't confident that they're able to achieve that, or they're just needing more support and encouragement, what are some ways that churches and the Christian community in general can support Christian families in educating their children in other ways?
Yeah, this is really important. And I think in Reformed churches, we talk about this much more freely than in more broadly evangelical churches.
And there are historical reasons for that, but there are also theological reasons with our doctrine of the covenant.
Yes.
That we have a more robust theological foundation upon which to build our understanding of education. So, you know, we'll have some reading in the description, some links to some books that might be useful on that. But you're right, we do speak about it more frequently and more freely in the Reformed Church, and especially in the continental tradition, because oftentimes the families of a church would create their own family association and then establish their own Christian school.
Yes. So I think first and foremost for churches, like one of the most important things you can do is talk about Christian education and help your families. Like some families didn't grow up in a Reformed church and they don't know about these things and they don't have that understanding and that background. And it's good just to bring it up and help them to understand the importance of giving your kids an education that is Christian. And then practically, churches often have facilities, which is something that can be used by homeschool groups. Even some Christian day schools be in churches and help use their facilities. So churches can be generous in supporting the work of local Christian schools, either homeschool co-op or private school, by sharing their facility. Another way to do it is through scholarship funds. And we've seen this done in a couple different ways in churches. One church we were part of had a scholarship fund that was part of the church's budget. And so families in the church could donate to the church, and the church administered the fund.
Well, it wasn't exactly in the budget so much as it was under the church's control. It was an account the church managed.
Yes, it was the church's account. Yeah. Our church has a fund at Westlake, where the school manages the scholarship fund, and anyone can donate to the Children of Hope OPC scholarship fund, and it's managed by the school, and every year you can apply. So anyone who attends our church can apply for scholarship funds, and then the school awards scholarship funds every year. And so there's several families from our church who benefit from this every year.
And several families donate to it, but also our church donates to it out of our general fund as well, under the guidance of the session and ultimately the approval of the members of the church who approve the budget and whatnot. So that's another very helpful way where if you are a member of Hope OPC, we have it set up where you can receive pretty significant financial relief for sending your kids to a private Christian school. Whereas that would, that's above and beyond. It's distinct from the type of financial relief you might receive from the financial care packages or aid packages that the school offers to everyone.
Right.
So that there are ways to do that. If you're interested in finding out, details on how we structured that, then please, write in and we'll connect you. We've got an email at mail@reformedforum.org, or we can send you over. I don't know if you want to give your general Westlake email,
we can connect
you to the appropriate people to find out details. Cause I imagine many other people are listening with Christian schools and officers of the church who might be interested in setting such a thing up for themselves.
I think it's a fantastic way, to support families and also for churches, rather than just making a general donation to the school, you can make sure that your donations to the school are going to benefit the kids in your congregation.
Be clear, you can't, as a grandparent, just donate to a school as a nonprofit and direct those funds to cover your grandchildren's tuition.
Right.
That would be illegal.
That is a tuition payment, not a donation.
Right. But there is a legal way to set up specific scholarship funds that are targeted towards members of individual churches.
Yeah, one of the requirements of the scholarship fund would be you attend this church, and then there's a published application process, and
anyone who qualifies for that would be able to do it. So what are some other ways churches and, the Christian community, I'm speaking of that because sometimes this cuts across specific church bounds. We have a lot of churches represented in our private Christian school, but what are some ways that Christians may support Christian families in education other than, churches opening facilities, providing spaces for groups to meet and scholarship funds? How else might they help?
Well, I think another way is moms who have survived homeschooling, who are empty nesters, to come alongside other parents who are homeschooling. You can help in the by providing childcare during a co-op. You can help moms who are just at home in the trenches doing it themselves, especially if there are younger siblings. They might need help, and then they might just need support and resources. And so I think there's definitely a place for families who are a little bit further ahead to come alongside.
Or maybe teach a class at the co-op.
Yeah.
We have a local OP pastor who's, teaching a theology course for a co-op.
Yeah, I think that's
great. And there are ways to do that. And even if you're not going to be part of a formal co-op, perhaps you can volunteer 45 minutes of your week and teach a family or two or three families a specific topic or something that you are skilled in. And you can offer that service and be of great benefit to people and give some relief to families who now no longer have to shoulder the entire burden.
Yeah. And one other thing, churches as a whole can foster kind of a culture that values Christian education, but that doesn't necessarily prioritize one form of Christian education over another. Because mm-hmm. I think it can be hard for families if you're in a church where everybody does this and you want to make a different choice. That can be hard, and that's not a burden that we want to put on families.
Right. I think many listeners may have be familiar with this phenomena, either visiting a church or being part of one where it's never known as this, but it feels like the homeschooling church. And if you don't homeschool your kids, whether you're sending them to public school or private school, even, you feel left out, or some people might even feel like sub-Christian, like they're not doing the full right thing. And we certainly have other cases where if most of the kids are going to a specific private school and you choose a different option, that you feel lesser than. Mm-hmm. And we never want that to be the case, but we want to be supportive. I think Christians ought to be supportive of each and in each specific family and try to raise them up and encourage them, and given the needs, the particular needs that they may have.
Yeah, I just think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. So what are some resources that we can point out to people, or how might people look more into this, maybe whether that's from a theoretical, abstract level, or even more specific use cases and specific challenges?
Well, there are some books and things that I think you're going to link to. Overall, I think that there's a lack of resources on Christian education. This is something that people should be thinking about more and talking about more, writing about more. It's kind of something where people are afraid to talk about it. And I don't think we should be, because it's really important. But Van Til has some resources on Christian education. Doug Wilson on classical Christian education.
He wrote a book that is a useful introduction to classical Christian education. The Van Til books are useful. If I can dig it up, there's a really wonderful article Van Til wrote in the Presbyterian Guardian years ago on the importance of and really the mandate of Christian education. But then he has a book called the Dilemma of Education, or something to that effect. It's in our previous Reformed Home Shopping Network episode of Reformed Media Review, if you haven't seen that yet. But then he co-wrote a book with Louis Burkhoff, in which they effectively alternate chapters on the subject of Christian education. I read one recently by David Engelsma, which had a lot of useful information, and I thought it was helpful on a lot of points, although he's coming from a very overt and decidedly Protestant Reformed position. So his book I thought was useful, although it certainly has a certain perspective. And then, you know, finding various resources and online communities that might support you in these regards, it's helpful. Most of all, if you can, talk to your pastor, talk to elders, talk to people in your church that have experience with these things. If you are a pastor or an elder and you're desiring more resources, write in. We'll perhaps, you know, spin up kind of an ad hoc, you know, community where we can share ideas. And you're right, Erica, there seem to be opportunities for greater theological discourse on this matter.
And if you're a pastor or an elder, and this is something that your church values and you don't have relationships yet in your community, I would suggest that you reach out to any Christian schools or any homeschool co-ops in your community and just ask to find out more information. They would be delighted to talk with you. They would probably come and meet with you and share resources. They might invite you to come and participate in something at their school. But if you could be a resource gatherer and help to provide information about choices in your community, that would be something that would be really helpful to families.
Absolutely.
In your congregation.
Wonderful. Well, visit us online at reformedforum.org. There we'll have information, all the links provided that we've discussed. And you'll be able to link to other resources that we provide, other conversations on this general relative topic. And you'll be able to click around at the more general educational resources we provide as well through Reformed Academy, which are mostly for officers and people interested in going deeper into some Reformed theological topics. Namely, we have the latest course, which is a course on Van Til's Trinitarian Theology, but we also have an introductory course in the Westminster Shorter Catechism on covenant theology. So head on over to reformedforum.org for all of those links. And if you'd like to contact us, of course, you can reach us at mail@reformedforum.org or use the contact form on the website. But I do want to thank everybody for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.